Please call the roll.
Chairman Martin.
Here.
Ms. Davis.
Here.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Here.
Mr. Lucchese.
Here.
Mr. Plavach.
Here.
Ms. Price. Not here. Ms. Shoemaker.
Here.
We have six.
All right. So we have a couple of very routine things to deal with tonight that we'll deal first before we begin the hearing. Initially, we have minutes from our meeting on December 14th that we need to approve. If everyone has had an opportunity to review these, could somebody make a motion to approve them?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Any second?
I second.
Any discussion? Please call the roll.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Mr. Plavach.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
Next thing on the agenda is review and approval of the findings of fact for the text amendment that we discussed at our last meeting in December. Again, these findings of fact were distributed for our review. If everyone has had an opportunity to review them, would somebody make a motion to approve the findings of fact?
Make a motion to approve the findings.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? Please call the roll.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Mr. Plavach.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
All right, so I figured that most of you are not here to listen to us approve the minutes. So now we'll deal with the proposed text amendments. And before we start, let's talk for a minute about procedure. We have a very straightforward, simple process. The individual who's filed the application for a variation, or in this case, to amend the zoning code, will first address the board. They will have an opportunity to present their information to us. I don't know how many people may speak in favor of that application on behalf of the applicant, but the first thing that happens is they have an opportunity to present to us. We as a board can question them during that application, during that presentation of the application, but there's no audience participation at that point. After the applicant has completed their presentation, we then call on everyone who is listed on the sign-up sheet to address us, and you'll have an opportunity to comment on the application, whether you're supporting it or don't like it. You can tell us why you don't like it or why you support it. You can suggest questions that we might ask the developer or in this case, the applicant. But you'll have as much time as is necessary for you to make your presentations. After you have the public participation, we then ask the applicant again to summarize their application, to answer any questions that have been raised. After that, we close the public portion of the hearing, and that means there's no more participation from the audience or from the applicant as we on the board discuss this and decide whether or not we're going to make a recommendation to the village trustees. We may ask questions during that time. We may ask questions of the applicant, or we may ask someone who has spoken to explain their what they've said or their position. But all that has been will be generated by the board members. Ultimately, we will make a recommendation to the village board. We don't make the final decision. We make a recommendation based on the evidence that is presented to us. The other thing that you should know is that it's our policy that these meetings usually end around 10 o'clock. So you should be home in time for the weather report about the storm of the century that we're going to occur. So if everyone who intends to address us tonight, have you had an opportunity to sign up? Are you all signed up? So would you please rise so that the secretary can swear you in? You don't get sworn in, you don't get to address us.
To those who will testify at the public hearing, you are reminded that the River Forest Village Code makes it unlawful for any person to knowingly make a false statement of material fact to the village in connection with any application, report, affidavit, oath, certification, or attestation. Violations are punishable as a petty offense with a fine. Please raise your hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will give true testimony relative to the matters before this Zoning Board of Appeals?
All right, thank you. So we would ask Mr. Houseel, if you're going to make the presentation. Who's going to do it? Whoever you want to do it, go ahead.
All right. Good evening, Chairman Martin and members of the Zoning Board. Matt, the village administrator, may be chiming in as well to provide some context from the last several months on this as well and what teed it up. And so, Matt, if you want to chime in on any of this, please feel free to go ahead. For the record, John Houseel, I'm a FAICP, Fellow of the American Institute of Certified Planners. I've been a resident for 25-plus years. Been the village's planning and zoning consultant for about 26 or 27 years before I moved here. Probably have the longest institutional memory with the exception of Chairman Martin on planning and zoning and development matters in the village for the past 2.5 decades. So a little bit of context for this evening. Chairman Martin mentioned the applicant. The applicant for this text amendment is the village itself, is the applicant. They are the ones who are proposing a text amendment. And I'll give a little context before we get into it. May I go ahead and go to the next slide? Matt's controlling the slideshow here. And you go to the next one. And you go to the next one. All right, so a little bit of the understanding of this. For as long as I've been here, 25 years or so, when the village has considered planned developments, so if you think of anything in town center, you think of the apartments on Clinton, you think of the developments at Park and Madison, you think of some of the developments that have taken place on Lake Street, of various densities on Thatcher, on Lathrop. Applicants come before you, developers come before you through a planned development process, and the village has not directed us to look at changing the planned development process. And they propose developments, and they almost always, without exception, if it's a residential component to the development, asked for site development allowances or variations in effect without the hardship standard, often for height to go above the allowed height, for density to provide more units than the code allows, to provide a building that's larger than the code allows, to provide something that covers more of the lot than the code allows. So they propose more intense development than the zoning has provided for decades, the zoning, the commercial districts. And as a result, a couple of things happen. I think all but one development in the last 20 years, maybe one or two, that has residential component has been approved with greater density, greater height, greater FAR than the code allowed. And a couple of things have happened over years. One, it became pretty clear to the village board and several different village boards, not just the seated one, that maybe our standards for commercial development wasn't in line with commercial realities. If everybody that came forward asked for exceptions, and almost everybody that got approved got the exceptions approved, some exceptions approved. Some densities developments have been close to double what was allowed, heights several stories, or a couple stories, several feet above. So as a result of those couple decades of public hearings, residents would often get frustrated, as would sometimes board members, development review board members, because the code was not effectively providing guidance if everybody got the exceptions asked and everybody got the exceptions approved. So what guidance was the zoning if everybody was the exception? So after a couple of decades of this, when the comprehensive plan was done, one of the recommendations in the comprehensive plan, and it was discussed quite a bit and even further strengthened when it got to the village board for adoption, was a specific recommendation that upon adoption of the comprehensive plan, one of the recommendations was that the village come back at a later date to examine the development regulations for the commercial districts to see if they should be allow more intense, higher densities, other things to be more responsive to the market. So, in keeping with sort of a couple decades of experience, The comprehensive plan approved by the village recommended that we examine, the village examine the commercial districts. So fast forward past COVID, because everything got shut down and a lot of that, the village in early 2023, so beginning part of last year, charged the Economic Development Commission, the EDC, with examining two corridors, Madison Street and North Avenue. So they didn't charge them with looking at all the commercial districts. They said, look at these two corridors, largely to coincide with economic development efforts of village-owned property along some of the corridors, development interests along the corridors, and that both of those corridors were now in TIF districts. So they thought it would be more enticing to developers to develop in the TIF districts. So over the course of several meetings, several months, the EDC examined Madison Street and North Avenue, so in effect, the C1 and C2 zoning districts, but only for those corridors. And we worked with them on that. We examined some redevelopment concepts on some of the key sites. We looked at some of the existing development that took place in the village over the past couple of decades and had a pretty robust discussion with them over the course of several months at several meetings. We held public workshops for residents, one for the North Avenue residents, one for the Madison Street neighborhoods. Only had one gentleman show up to the North Avenue meeting after we tried to schedule it a couple of times. We had several people attend when we discussed the Madison Street corridor to get input. And those were independent resident sessions, not with the EDC. And then we had several follow-up meetings with the EDC where a lot of the residents came to the EDC meetings and spoke and repeated and said a lot of things that they said at the workshop, as well as then having the ability to talk directly to the EDC members and not just myself and Matt who conducted the resident workshops. We also took a look at the zoning regulations for the commercial districts in Elmwood Park, Elmwood Park, Oak Park, Forest Park, to compare it to River Forest for height, density, setback, parking, things like that along those corridors. And then we also called up and spoke with developers, architects, and local municipal planners to sort of gauge what they were seeing, what they thought was appropriate, what they were experiencing, what they were approving, what they were not denying, what they were proposing on those same corridors in those adjacent communities. So we spoke with several developers, planners, and architects. So after we did all that the EDC heard from us, we did a lot of examination. They heard from residents. They had a lot of discussion. They gave us direction for the C1 and C2, so North Avenue and Madison Street. And they couched those as recommendations for consideration and recommended the village board consider sending those to the ZBA for public hearing. So those recommendations, and I'll go through those in a little bit, went to the village board to be referred to the ZBA to start the public hearing process. In that window of time, it became clear, and we had several conversations, Matt and I did, and those got conveyed to the village board and back and forth, that the EDC was charged with looking at North Avenue and Madison Street, but they weren't charged with looking at the village center area, the C3 district. They weren't charged with looking at the ORIC district where Panera is and Kirk Eye Center, that whole section of Lake Street. And while they were charged with looking at Madison Street specifically, they weren't charged with the other C2 pockets, which are Thatcher and Lake, Harlem and Oak, Harlem and Chicago, and Harlem and Division. There are little pockets at each one of those for a gas station, a convenience store, a McDonald's. Those are all in the same zoning district as Madison Street. So they looked at Madison Street, they looked at North Avenue, but they didn't look at all the commercial. And it became clear that we sort of had to have some waterfall components in our code. They'll say like, you know, what's allowed in here is what's allowed in the C1. And so there's references back and forth. And it also became clear, and a lot of the residents in Madison Street said, why are we just looking at Madison Street and North Avenue? Why don't we look at all the commercial, not just these, because they were in the TIP district. So the village directed us to propose a text amendment for all the commercial districts. But we didn't have the benefit yet of having talked with anybody about the C3 or the ORIC. So we took our direction in this based off of EDC conversation from the other two in terms of their approach to these topics. So with that sort of prelude, this is a starting point text amendment addressing and reflecting what the EDC said on two of the four districts. Our interpretation of extrapolating that approach to the other commercial districts as a starting point for this, but you can change all of it, none of it, approve some of it, and add to it, take away, whatever we want. This is just to sort of start the public hearing motion. So With that, we can go to the next slide, and we'll go through this pretty quickly. So this is the district the EDC was charged with looking at, North Avenue. What you see there in the black is the TIF district. What you see in the red is the TIF district. What you see there are those purple sites. Those were sites the EDC selected and asked if we could do some sort of illustrative development scenarios to get a sense of what would 50 feet look like, what would four stories look like, what would the setback changes look like. So they selected those three. Go to the next one. And this is what they were charged with looking with at Madison Street. So again, the TIF district is in red or pink. The commercial is that's there, the C1 is, or the C2 on Madison Street is C2. That's the black outline. And then the selected sites the EDC asked us to take a look at was the site labeled M1 and M2 just for illustrative purposes. So go ahead and we can rifle through this next one. So that's one of the sites up on North Avenue that we looked at. Go ahead and go to these. And for each of these, you can sort of toggle through these quickly. We looked at different heights, different parking arrangements, different land uses, residential with commercial on the ground floor, just to give them a sense of what some commercial development could look like here. Not recommending these. The EDC is not recommending these. No one is proposing these. This is just done so we could roll up our sleeves and sort of work on some ideas. You can go through all these. This is Madison Street. This is, you can see that that's Franklin and Madison Street. This then is the Lutheran Family Services site. We did a couple of different scenarios, one showing Ashland cul-de-sac, one showing Ashland not cul-de-sac, parking behind it, one big building, one small building. What you see sort of in that grayish or blue color are sort of the extruded height of some of the adjacent buildings. That big square right above Chairman Martin's head on the screen up there for those in the audience. That's that new mixed-use development in Forest Park. That is on the south side of the street, sort of next to the Dunkin' Donuts there and the dry cleaners. And that is, so you guys know, that is 36 units. And I believe it's parked at about 1.15 or 1.2 parking spaces per unit in that building. That site is smaller than the Village's Lutheran Family Services owned sites, if you take it all into control. So for visualization, you could put that building in Forest Park over in River Forest and then some to give you a sense of scale. We looked at some of the neighboring communities, and this is some of their zoning. For parking, River Forest is 2 spaces per unit. Oak Park is 1 space per unit. Elmwood Park is 1.25 spaces per residential unit. Forest Park is 2 spaces per unit. But from talking to them, they almost never adhere to that. Example is that development on Madison Street next to the Dunkin' Donuts right across the street from Luthi Family Services. That's parked at, I think, like I said, 1.15 or 1.2. So code is 2, but they park it less than that. Height in River Forest on Madison Street is 30 feet right now. North Avenue is 50 feet. Oak Park is 50 feet on Madison Street. Forest Park is 50 feet on Madison Street. Elmwood Park is 60 to 75 feet on North Avenue. So these are some of the adjacent ones, right? The density in River Forest is 2,800 square feet of lot area per unit. So it's not a, you know, 8 units per acre. They calculate it per lot area. So in River Forest, you have to have 28 square feet of lot area per unit. So if you had a 28,000 square foot lot, you could put 10 units. That's the math, right? So Oak Park, their requirement is 750 to 1,000 foot of lot area per unit. So triple the density that River Forest allows. And then Elmwood Park is a little more than double the density at 1,250 lot area per unit. So Oak Park is triple the density River Forest allows. Elmwood Park is about double the density River Forest allows. So this, we just want to look at some general comparisons along the same corridors with our neighboring adjacent communities. So go ahead and go to the next slide. We spoke with developers, architects, planners, familiar with and active in River Forest, Oak Park, Forest Park, and the general area. The architects and planners we interviewed, developers were people that actually been proposing developments, not just in here, but in neighboring communities. Some of the architects and planners were architects and planners who either worked for the municipalities and or worked for developers or in several developers. They could say, here's what our development clientele is proposing. Talk to Craig Failer in Oak Park, and he's like, here's what we're seeing as a village developers are proposing, and here's what we are approving or denying. And so with that, it include developers, planners, and architects that worked on residential, mixed use, commercial, and a lot more. The main comments that we heard from this group, now mind you, this is a group that's in the development circle. We asked them to comment on River Forest regs and their experience with it or knowledge of it. And but most of the consensus, these bullet points here off to the right-hand side, this consensus was pretty thorough. The minimum of 4 stories is needed. 5 or 6 stories is a plus and is preferred. Anything less than 4 stories in the marketplace isn't realistic. Parking spaces, River Forest parking space requirement of 2 spaces per unit is too much. 1 to 1.25 for residential may be more appropriate. Nationally, the trend we're seeing is reduction in parking, not an increase in parking. So one or anywhere between 1 to 2, 1.5, but less than 2 is a trend across the United States in a lot of urban areas. Density, ours again is 2,800 square feet of lot area per unit. Trending densities are higher even in Oak Park and Forest Park and Elmwood Park, let alone the big cities. But densities housing existing service areas, 400 to 500 square feet of lot area was cited by several as what they often propose and what sometimes gets and what will get approved. So, and again, I think Oak Park was 700 square feet of lot area per unit. Setbacks, typically in commercial districts like these, setbacks are 0 unless they are immediately adjacent or share a lot line to residential or the rear lot line is adjacent to a front line in a residential district. But setbacks, they said in River Forest, were fine. FAR is floor area ratio. I'll explain that in a little bit. We have FAR regs. FAR regs really came into being strongly, probably in the 90s. But again, the trend nationally in zoning is to begin to do away with FAR regulations. And most developers and most of the architects, we said, if you have height, setback, lot coverage, density, all these other things in place, FAR probably is not a required component. And then uses, generally say said the uses that were allowed in our zoning district were appropriate. The plan development process would allow some deviation of that. But all of them indicated that retail on Madison west of Des Plaines is very difficult. And I think that's borne out with some of the applications we've gotten. It's a challenge to get retail development in River Forest on Madison Street and really on the south side in Forest Park. They have a cemetery, then they've got that smaller commercial mix. So this is what we heard back from developers. This is just sums up a little bit, and Matt can go into this more if he wants. And we have a lot of the residents here. There's a lot of feedback and discussion, again, with myself and Matt and directly with the EDC at several meetings with residents. There was a desire, and again, this is just a quick hit list. We have some detailed comments, but this is sort of boiled down to residents commented on other developments and other things, but these are relevant to the zoning district. So a desire to see commercial setbacks match the R2 district setbacks. And what I mean by that is if, for example, if you're walking down Ashland Avenue, right, toward Madison, and the residential homes on Ashland before you get to the alley have a certain setback. But when you get into the commercial, those commercial buildings can be closer to Ashland than the residential front yards. And that's true on all the commercial corridors that is zoning. River Forest, the residents in Madison Street said they would like to have those commercial setbacks on those corners match the residential front yard setbacks along those intersecting streets. There was concern for the sight lines. If we go higher on, like, say, commercial, and again, specifically on Madison Street, and we had residential units that might be on like a 4th floor, the line of sight from those 4th floor units into the backyards of the single family homes that were to the north in those single family neighborhoods. So line of sight and privacy issues was raised. The issue, again, of privacy and shadow lines and shadows that would be cast from taller commercial into the adjacent residential were issues that were raised. Residents raised the issue and we took, because we showed different parking scenarios, they said parking in that area is already an issue and parking enforcement needs to be reconsidered in that area if more intense commercial is provided. But parking is a big issue in that area and we can't forget about parking if zoning regulations are changed. One resident noted that property tax increase, if anything is built on Lutheran Family Services, will be a plus because Lutheran Family Services wasn't paying property taxes. And then one resident proposed using the village-owned site for office space for entrepreneurs because there's a lack of that type of use in the village. North Avenue, again, there was only one resident. We tried a couple of times to get North Avenue residents to show up. Concern about providing enough parking for all the uses so it doesn't spill over to the residential neighborhood, not dissimilar to Madison Street. And they expressed concern about some of the current traffic barriers and traffic flow that exists right now up there on North Avenue as commercial development happens to minimize traffic impact on residential. So that's a quick summary of some of the feedback we got as it pertains to zoning of these two streets. So these were the zoning considerations that the EDC gave us, the direction. Again, the applicant here is the village. So even though I'm the one presenting these amendments for consideration, it was at the direction of the EDC. We weren't given carte blanche to say, like, if you could do anything you wanted, what would you do? So these don't reflect what I would do in theory. These reflect direction given by the EDC. So the zoning considerations the EDC recommended to the village board was that existing parking of two spaces go to a range of anywhere between the 1 to 1.5 for residential uses. Building heights on North Avenue are existing 50. They recommended going to 65. That would allow a five-story building with sort of a contemporary commercial ground floor, and we show that up there. Building heights on Madison Street right now are 30. The EDC recommended going to 50. That would allow a four-story building, three stories of residential above a contemporary commercial ground floor space. Density, they recommended right now it's 2,800 square feet of lot area. That's 17 units per acre. You want a density number. And they recommended a range of somewhere between 500 and 1,000. They were leaning toward 1,000 square feet of lot area. So if it was 1,000 square feet of lot area per unit, it would be 43 dwelling units per acre. FAR existing is 2.75. They recommended eliminating the FAR requirement because of the other requirements that are in place. Unit size right now, the existing is 1,800 square foot is the average gross living area. That's a pretty big apartment for average, right? And so they recommended 1,000 square feet. So you might have some units that are a little above, you might have some units that are above, but average over the course of a development would have to meet 1,000 square foot average. So not quite less than half of the minimum living area size. Setbacks, they recommended no changes to the setbacks. And then the bedroom requirement, they were kicking around the idea of eliminating the requirement that there shall be at least one bedroom. If this were to happen, you could have like a studio or an efficiency apartment as opposed to at least a one bedroom. So that was the direction given by the EDC for Madison and North Avenue. But again, it didn't affect the C3. It didn't affect the ORIC. And they didn't examine, weren't charged with looking at the C2 district in those other little weird pockets or those other pockets on Thatcher and Lake. And Harlem at Oak, Chicago, and Division. So these are the EDC recommendations that went to the village board. And go to the next. So again, real quickly, just as an example, the EDC looked at C1 on North Avenue and C2 on Madison Street. They did not look at C2 on Lake and Thatcher, Harlem and Oak, Harlem and Chicago, Harlem and Division. So we have to consider those. They did not look at C3. C3 is the central commercial area, sort of we call it the village center area. Those have been around here for a while. And that is that area like where River Forest Chocolates is, Alon Salon, the bank. That's that area on the south side of Lake Street between Lathrop and Park. That's that section. That's C3. They weren't charged with looking at that. And they didn't look at ORIC. And ORIC has some of the most intense development in the village. That's Town Center, Kirk Eye Center, all the way down and including Jewel, all the way down to Lathrop. So that south side of Lake Street between Harlem Avenue and Lathrop is the ORIC, Office Research, Industrial, and Commercial District. They didn't look at those districts either. So what we had to go with in terms of crafting something for the ZBA to start with was the direction EDC gave on increased density, reduced parking requirements, increased height, and eliminating FAR. So we sort of carry those approaches to accommodating development more appropriately to the other districts. And the way I think Wally Wahlfeld of the EDC said it well, best when a resident asked him Chairman Brown provided a lot of answers. Wally Wahlfeld works for Jones Lang LaSalle. He's worked with retail his whole career. He knows it really well. And he said, what we're trying to do is improve the quality and the range of proposals that would come into the village for us to consider. Right. It doesn't mean anything would be automatically approved, or we're trying to prove the quality and the types of development that were being at least proposed or considered. And right now, the EDC felt as though our zoning was so restrictive where we weren't even getting people proposing things that were creative or appropriate because they didn't think it would stand legitimate consideration. So these are all the districts we have to look at this evening. Or the next one. So I'll go through the summary of changes that are in this draft, starting draft for the text amendment. So we did one thing. One of the things we first worked on was Right now, the zoning for our zoning ordinance, and I've said this for, I've been here 25 years, I've said this for 24 and a half years. The zoning ordinance really does require, I think, a comprehensive, complete overhaul. It's been a long time. They've looked at little pieces here and there, and you've been charged with looking at ADUs. We've looked at residential. We've looked at a lot of things over the years. We've tweaked the PD process, but we've not stepped back and comprehensively examined this. Right now, the four commercial districts are in four separate chapters, and you get a repetition and a repeat of parking and uses and height and setback. It's not all in one chapter. It doesn't make use of tables or charts. It's not a user-friendly, it's not a contemporary code. It's not the way codes now are being done. And just for reference, we've probably done 75 or 80 zoning ordinances in 20 different states across the country. I think right now we're working on zoning in at least 9 different states. Last year, we won California's top award for a housing element, housing study, housing zoning ordinance that we wrote there. And we're writing zoning all over the country. We wrote one specifically, an article, and it's funny, one of the residents at our meeting brought an article to the EDC meeting and was quoting a zoning article. And it was one that I had written last February for zoning practice, myself and Jackie Wells, our practice lead for zoning in our office, who she and I worked on this. So we took the four different chapters, 12, 13, 14, and 15, and 10, and we combined them into one new chapter 12. So all the commercial districts are now in one chapter. All right. So if you want to find out what the height is, you can look up height and you just go across the table and see all four districts. You want to see density, it's all in one place. Everything is in one place. You're not flipping back and forth between multiple pages. And I've got with me here the printout of all the existing chapters, as well as you've got in your packet our proposed new complete organization of this one chapter. We didn't have the liberty to do the whole thing because we were just charged with doing commercial. So we organized the whole thing. Go ahead. So this is allowed residential uses, right? So C1, C2, C3, and ORIC. So again, C1 is North Avenue. C2 is Madison Street, mostly. C3 is the Village Center area, River Forest Chocolates, Salon, that area. ORIC is Jewel all the way up to the town center. So right now, residential uses in the C1 are not allowed. In the C2 and C3, it's allowed for your planned development. In the ORIC, it's not allowed, even though we have residential in those districts. Through the PD process, you can do that. All right. You can get developments, uses, and standards that aren't in the underlying zoning through the plan development process. You can get approval for those types of development. So our proposed changes is to make residential, multifamily residential development. The biggest need every community is facing right now is residential. Across the country, without exception, residential affordability, availability, variety of uses is the biggest issue almost every community is facing. So what we did here, we're proposing that our proposed ordinance language would allow residential in every district, every commercial district, but it would have to be approved via PUD process. So they have to come in, make a proposal, make a pitch, apply for a specific development to demonstrate architecture, height, use, everything. But we think this is a very simple, straightforward change that to just say, listen, we're acknowledging residential should be allowed under the right conditions in every commercial district. And so this is our first change is to allow it in this table. Go to the next one. Building height right now, again, you can see in the C1 through ORIC, the maximum building height right now is that middle top column, and it's C1 is 50 feet, C2 is 30 feet, that's Madison, C1 again is North Avenue, C3 and ORIC, it's basically Lake Street. Right now it's 50 feet. So 50, 30, and 50. And what we're proposing at the EDC's direction for the C1 North Avenue is to go from 50 to 65. At the EDC's direction in the C2 along Madison Street to go from 30 to 50. And the intent of there was to allow one more story than currently allows. And then for the C3 and ORIC, we did not have the benefit of any discussion or consensus direction. So, but in keeping with it, raising it to get one more story like the other two, we're recommending the C3 and the ORIC go from 50 to 65 as well. That would get you one more story and hopefully better architecture. So that was our recommendation, reflecting EDC direction. Residential densities right now, as a note, in the commercial districts, there is no commentary on residential densities. The residential densities are pulled over from the R4 multifamily district. So when someone proposes multifamily in a commercial district, they typically are referencing R4 standards because there are no residential standards in the commercial districts. So we're proposing to change that. So we think in this newly revised commercial section, because we are now suggesting residential be permitted or not permitted, but allowed to be applied for, right now in the C1, C2, and C3, it's 2,800 square feet per residential unit. And in the ORIC, it's not allowed. It's only allowed via plan development, but there's no standards for it. So we're recommending we go to the higher end of the EDC range, which is 1,000 square feet of lot area per unit. So that's going to be 43 units per acre, all right? An acre is 43,560 square feet. So that would be a recommended change across all commercial districts. Any commercial residential, any residential density in the commercial district would be allowed to be at 1,000 square feet of lot area per dwelling unit or 43 units per acre. So and that'd be across all four districts. So that's a significant change. That would not quite triple the density in the commercial districts for allowed residential. But again, almost all the residential we have isn't this anyway. It's in many cases at least double or more than double this anyways. I'll go to the next one. Up, back up one more. So this is floor area ratio. I'm assuming most of you know what it is because you probably deal with this. I don't know if everybody in the audience knows what it is. Floor area ratio is basically the size of the building relative to the lot that it sits on, right? So it's the floor area ratio. The ratio is the building floor to the lot area. So we have some examples off to the right. So you'll see those three buildings there. Those all have an FAR of 1, all right? So the top one is 100% lot coverage. So that darker red square at the bottom there is the lot area. And if 100% of the lot was covered, one story, that's an FAR of 1. If you go to the image in the middle, same lot area, but only half of it is covered with the building, that building can be 2 stories tall and you still have an FAR of 1, right? Because the floor area of the building still equals the floor area of the lot, right? And if you go to the bottom one, we're only covering up a quarter of the lot, but it's shown as a 4-story building. So those 4 floors together on one level would cover up the same size as the lot. So that's FAR, right? And so right now we have an FAR limit in the commercial districts of 2.75, right? So it would be way more than this. And what we're saying is with height, with setback, with lot coverage, with parking requirements, we don't think FAR is necessary in the commercial districts as a regulating bulk standard or regulation standard. So we recommended eliminating the FAR, and that was the direction of the EDC as well. But that's what FAR is. I want to make sure everybody sort of knew what it was. And again, most of the mixed-use buildings that we've approved in the last couple of decades in the village far exceed the allowed FAR. So they exceed the height, they exceed the density, and they exceed the FAR. So the only development that I can think of, and Chairman Martin, you know this, you may be the only one in the room who's reviewed all of these along with me over the last couple of decades. I think the only one that meets the residential densities was probably Heinz Lumber Company is the only one I can think of that met the density that was permitted on that site based on the units of townhomes. In fact, I think they could actually have 2 more townhomes than they do. I think they have 27. They could have had 29 or 30. But everybody else exceeded what the code allowed. I'll go to the next one. So parking, this is another one. Parking is one of the biggest determinants in residential density. You can say whatever kind of residential density you want to allow, but if you're requiring 2 parking spaces per unit, you can only get so many units on the site because you can only get so much parking on the site. So parking de facto is a density limiter. And that's not by accident in a lot of communities, that's with intent. But you also don't want, as residents mentioned, both on North Avenue and Madison Street, you don't want commercial parking overflow into residential neighborhoods, right? It's not residential streets should not be parking lots for the adjacent commercial area. So you want to make sure you're accommodating enough commercial parking in the commercial districts so it doesn't negatively impact the residential. So what we've done here, and this is consistent with EDC direction and everybody we talk with and national trends, is right now the current residential parking minimums for 1 to 2 bedroom dwellings is 2 parking spaces. For a 3+ bedroom dwelling is 2.5 parking spaces. And then for every 5 units, you have to also then have a guest space. These are pretty onerous parking regs compared to almost any subdivision, let alone sort of an urban community. And so what we recommended here, and again, with the EDC's blessing for C1 and C2, is that the parking for multifamily units in the commercial districts be 1.5 parking spaces per unit. And we recommended that they consider something between like 1.5 and 1, and they were comfortable with 1 or 1.5. So this is the recommendation that parking be reduced, standards be reduced to 1.5. So we can go to the next. And then the loading standards are sort of antiquated. They're overly prescriptive. And the delivery of commerce, materials, and goods into retail and service establishments isn't the same delivery system in a lot of these stores as it used to be. Vehicles are different. Panel trucks come more frequently, but they're smaller as opposed to large loads once or twice a week via semi-truck. This isn't true for all uses, but for some. These delineated, hyper-prescribed bay heights, widths, and lengths for loading areas prescribed off of area of building. It's not the trend. It hasn't been for a long time. So we proposed language in here that is a bit more reflective of what we've been doing across the country. It provides a little bit more flexibility to the developer in terms of the placement and the size of required loading, making sure that loading is being accommodated for, but is not being excessively prescribed and making it onerous on developers. What tends to happen is they just get relief from the standards for loading areas. So in the back, I guess the last section of the text amendment, we revise some language for loading requirements for commercial areas. Go to the next one. So again, and then you go to the last one. Last one just is what we're talking about. But again, so the EDC at the village's direction looked at North Avenue and Madison Street, C1 and C2. They made recommendations on height, density, parking, setbacks, FAR, residential sizes, all of those. And so we carried those forward to the village board. Village board directed us after some consideration because they realized it wouldn't work just to make sort of surgical strikes for portions of 2 districts. It didn't make any sense. So they gave us the direction after some back and forth to at the EDC's general direction on those 2 to extrapolate it out and propose an initial text amendment for all the commercial districts. The EDC did not look at uses. I know there are some recent use cases that the text amendments are being proposed by the applicants in the village for daycare and some other things. The EDC did not look at uses, did not give us any direction to amend the uses. But at this point, you know, Chairman Martin, we can look at anything the EDC recommended, anything that you want to talk about or the ZBA does that the EDC chose not to. It's all on the table, but that's how we got here. And that's why the recommendations in this text amendment are what they are. And again, the village is the applicant and directed this to come forward.
So are you proposing one amendment to the zoning code that encompasses all of these matters you've spoken about, or is it the wish of the village to deal with each separately?
I think they can discuss all of them individually, obviously, but I would recommend, and yeah, village attorney can certainly speak in here from her experience, but I would imagine sort of like when a development is proposed, you get everything right, even if you change everything, then you have one motion to approve what it is you're approving, even if there's conditions. So what I would recommend is we go through, we can talk about all the parts till we get it right. And then there's a proposed text amendment with whatever that language is. So it would be, I would think, one text amendment being approved that would affect several different sections of the zoning ordinance. And again, attorney can...
I mean, it really can be done either way.
Yeah.
So what the village's preference is with regards to the structure and timing, I imagine it is the most efficient to kind of put them in one group and one ordinance and pass it together. But you know, we work at your direction. So
yeah. I guess the challenge in doing, and you're right, you could do it either way, but if we did a motion specifically for one and then you started talking about something else and said, well, that's going to impact the one we had the motion for. That's why as a package, it might be helpful. Zoning tends to impact and cross-pollinate regulations. So.
Sorry, John, is there anybody else that wants to address us to explain the proposed amendments?
Administrator Walsh wants to say something.
I think John covered the process pretty well and the recommendations. I just want to touch a little bit on the Economic Development Commission met last night to discuss the C3 and ORIC districts. We were trying to have that meeting earlier, but schedules and the like prevented getting that feedback earlier. The EDC was generally in support of those, you know, kind of extrapolating, as John described it, to those districts. But I will share that the EDC did have concerns or question the height increase for the C3 and ORIC districts from 50 feet to 65 feet. They weren't sure if that was necessary to kind of align with North Avenue or be its own height increase. So that's what the EDC spoke about last night, so felt it was necessary to share with the CBA tonight.
All right, at this point, does anybody on the board have questions for Mr. Houseel or Mr. Walsh? All right, thank you. So what we'll do now is ask Mr. Raddatz to call on the individuals who signed up indicating that they wish to address the board tonight on this matter.
Debbie Borman.
Okay. Hi, thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. I'm Debbie Borman. I live on the first block of Lathrop in the Madison TIF. I have prepared some things to say, but I first wanted to respond to some of the things that Mr. Houseel said in his speech. So if I could just comment on a few things before I get started. And also, in addition, there are other people here who signed up. I know that there's not, I haven't heard like a stated time limit for talking, but others here have said that they would cede their time to me so that I could complete my statement. So first of all, I just wanted to comment that in terms of the so-called stakeholder meetings, which were last February, that there were not just several residents at the Madison Street meeting, but there were 22 of us as opposed to the single resident that attended the North Avenue meeting. I'd also like to observe that in the images that were presented tonight, they do not adequately reflect a shadow study of the potential and draft heights of any buildings that would appear on Madison. So that would be like a comment that those are inaccurate. Oak Park on Madison is not really comparable to River Forest on Madison. The street is wider. It is not the same type of district right up against single family homes. Oak Park also, I guess, yes, it is adjacent, but it is four or five times the population of River Forest and has a considerably larger business district. I'd also like to comment that one of the developers that Mr. Houseel consulted with last year, maybe January or before the February meeting, was Ambrosia, which recently withdrew its 12-unit building from the corner of Ridgeland and Chicago after residents protested that the building was too high and too large. Finally, Madison West, which is the Forest Park building that's directly across from the LCFS site, is a 36-unit building. There are two bedrooms and two bathrooms only in that building. There is no unit smaller than 1,056. They range from 1,056 to 1,228 square feet within the building. Finally, in terms of the article that one of my neighbors cited at the one of the, I think it was an EDC meeting that Mr. Houseel said he authored, that article was cited as conflicting with the theory that he was presenting at the meeting. The article was a book called Gentle Density, and what is being proposed here is other than gentle. So now if I can proceed with my prepared comments. To start out, I'd just like to say that I'm representing members of my 50-plus neighbor group, Lathrop, Ashland, Franklin neighbors, many of whom who could not be here tonight for many different reasons, and that we are disheartened to see, after more than a year of meetings, both at our homes, at Village Hall, and after a litany of thoughtful, practical, and heartfelt letters, testimony, and other communications to the village, its agents, board, and commissioners, that the EDC put forward to the village and the village put forward to this unit, the proposal that is proposed as a text amendment. This text amendment seeks to fundamentally alter the C2 zoning on Madison Street to the detriment of the R2 zoned property in the adjacent residential district on Madison, and goes against the goals stated in the 2019 River Forest Comprehensive Plan. First of all, Illinois law requires municipalities to adopt and enforce zoning regulations to promote the public health, safety, comfort, morals, and welfare. The factors considered in promoting these goals include the existing uses and zoning of nearby property, the extent to which property values are diminished by the zoning, the relative gain to the public as compared to the hardship imposed upon individual property owners, the suitability of the subject property for the zoned purpose, and the length of time the property has been vacant as zoned, considered in the context of land development in the area in the vicinity of the subject property. So for existing use, as Mr. Housiel explained, the C2 commercial district is intended to provide for a combination of retail, office, and service uses. Residential uses are permitted only by plan development. The other existing uses in the C2 zoned area between Lathrop and Franklin are currently one or two-story businesses, a dentist's office, dry cleaner, auto shop, sports store, union headquarters, among other businesses. Directly adjacent to the C2 commercial district between Lathrop and Franklin are R2 single family and two flat homes. This proposed text amendment diminishes our property. The prospect of a tall and wide apartment building diminishes the property values of the existing family homes adjacent to the Madison C2 district, contrary to the comprehensive plan. The core objectives stated in the comprehensive plan seek to balance the need for commercial areas with the importance of mitigating impacts on the village's residential neighborhoods. To quote, each infill redevelopment opportunity requires a heightened level of sensitivity and creativity to appropriately balance the village's existing character with the need and desire for economic development, unquote. In terms of the gain versus the hardship, the potential hardship of a large multi-unit residential building on the homeowners in South River Forest include increased traffic because of density, transients, increased pressure on infrastructure, reduced parking, crowded schools, noise, and increased activity adjacent to a residential neighborhood. Suitability. The text amendment paves the way for an unsuitable development. A large structure with dense residency on a shallow plot of land abutted against single-family homes is unsuitable zoning. The comprehensive plan highlights the need to, quote, provide adequate off-street parking to accommodate the needs of existing businesses and future development, and to better regulate the commercial districts in a manner reflective of market realities and the desired character for the areas, unquote. Although it's been discussed that there's no plan for reducing the setback, that doesn't seem to be the case. A reduced setback behind any proposed amendment to the zoning would create shadows and deprive the homes of light and air. This was discussed at prior meetings. C2 changes the rear yard setback. A high-rise building abutted up against our residential two-story homes at 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever stories with no rear yard setback deprives our homes on Ashland for sure and potentially on Franklin and Lathrop of light and air. And I say on potentially because last night's EDC meeting, it was discussed that the village might be interested in acquiring more property on Madison. Our homes are not commercial buildings and are not surrounded by open space. The proposed amendments alter the character of our neighborhood. As for the bedroom requirement, the memo also proposes to eliminate the bedroom requirement for dwellings in the C2 district with, as he just stated, a proposed minimum of 1,000 square feet. To this end, at an EDC meeting last spring, Mr. Housiel floated the concept of a building containing 46 to 48 units. At 50 feet or 4 stories, and with a quantity of units stated in the high 40s on the shallow plot of the former LCFS property, that density could only mean a large quantity of studio apartments. Rental apartments in that density would permanently alter the character of the neighborhood. Length of time vacant, another factor. It's notable that the LCFS property and the empty lots formerly boasting 2 family homes are vacant only because the village bought the properties and intentionally neglected and blighted the properties over the course of 6 to 8 years. The issues sought to be rectified here are of the village's own making. This proposed text amendment is not the solution. To sum up this section, the C2 zoning is adjacent to residential single-family homes and small multifamily residences. A high-rise, dense, residential rental building with no setback and limited parking will diminish the adjacent property values. The relative gain is speculative compared to the potential hardship on the character of the neighborhood. Although it is neither clearly stated in the memo and the text amendment, nor stated as the purpose of the text amendment, comments in the media and in prior board and commission meetings suggest that the fundamental change in the C2 district on Madison is designed to meet the state's affordable housing requirement for River Forest. Plans for defining and supporting affordable housing are complex and cannot be addressed without complete transparency. The Illinois Affordable Housing Planning and Appeal Act has a process for non-home rule municipalities to follow to create affordable housing without voiding all existing zoning. To pave the way for 40 to 50 small rental units on Madison by text amendment imposes an unreasonable burden on a few in our community, rather than crafting a shared community obligation across the village. This burden contradicts the stated goals of the comprehensive plan to ensure, again, quote, heightened sensitivity, unquote, to River Forest residents and is inconsistent with proper planning and development. It has never been contemplated that River Forest would provide 40 to 50 studio apartments in a single mixed-use commercial zone abutting an R2 residential neighborhood to satisfy a promise of affordable housing. Admittedly, tonight's meeting is not the proper forum to consider appropriate plans for affordable housing. The approach to such plans takes considerable time and thoughtful planning. Nevertheless, it is well established that what is missing in housing availability is not studio rental units, but rather affordable owner-occupied homes in the middle-income range. Without a carefully crafted village-wide approach to affordable home ownership and what additional building will benefit this community, this proposed radical change by text amendment reads as improper spot zoning and is intended and destined to damage the village. In conclusion, development can proceed on the corner of Madison and Ashland as zoned in compliance with the current C2 zoning related to height, setback, parking, unit size, which really doesn't apply because that's planned development, and square footage and the application of a plan development that would influence that. If a developer comes forward with a plan requiring a variance, such as was explained by Mr. Hauziel, the constituents, my neighbors, and I are entitled to a public hearing, and the affected residents will assess and comment on the plans and proposal at that time. In the process, a developer can submit a proposal, and the village can consider variances, as the village has done with several other developments and plan developments on Madison Street. If the ZBA eliminates the bulk of zoning requirements by text amendment, however, the DRB's hands are significantly tied to defeat an inappropriate development proposal. Hauziel's statement at the so-called stakeholder meeting in February 2023 and later at the EDC that our zoning is outdated and, quote, out of whack, shows that proposed amendment is not only an effort to fundamentally rewrite the zoning without a reasoned explanation, but also to limit the authority of the zoning board and the DRB in its charter. Tonight, members, you are being told you must pass this amendment on just because. The circular reasoning circumvents your charter. This text amendment attempts to put into place substantial zoning change without detailing the true reasons for the change or acknowledging the impacts on adjoining properties and the entire village. Zoning alterations with scant detail and information should not be the legacy of this committee. In Mr. Hauziel's own words, we want our residential neighborhoods to look like they are right now, 100 years from now. This was an interview in the Wednesday Journal on April 16, 2019. Thank you for your time.
Any questions at this time?
Daniel Lauber.
I'm wearing this mask for your protection. My wife is just finished isolation and masking from COVID, and I'd rather take an abundance of caution. My name is Daniel Lauber. I live at 7215 Oak. I've lived there only for 37 years, so I'm a newbie. And I have served President Regas appointed me to the Zoning Board of Appeals a number of years ago. I've been a planner for 51 years, a zoning attorney for 38. I've been president of the American Planning Association and twice president of the American Institute of Certified Planners, and have received at least one planning award in each of the last four decades. I've written scores of zoning amendments for cities and counties around the country, ranging from California to Arizona. Florida, Arizona. And I am hoping that the proposal before you will be very thoughtfully and carefully considered. There is no need to rush. It is very important to identify unintended consequences. There are just three items I wish to address, and I am going to try to keep this very factual based on sound planning and zoning principles. One, the parking. In a town that does not allow on-street overnight parking, it is extraordinarily irresponsible to go for something that is trendy with this rigid and unsupportable idea that that you should have 1.5 parking spaces per dwelling unit. The proper way of doing it is to base the parking requirements on the likely number of vehicles that will be generated by the building. That's based on the number of bedrooms and the type of structure. The River Forest Zoning Ordinance used to have in it a table of how many parking spaces would be generated by single-family homes with X number of bedrooms, multifamily with X number of bedrooms. Did the same thing for students, how many students would be generated by studio apartment, one-bedroom apartment, two-bedroom apartment, single-family home with one, two, three, four, or more bedrooms. Those factual information, it is readily available from the proper planning fields that should be consulted in determining the number of bedroom parking spaces required. I strongly urge you to reject the proposal of 1.5 parking spaces per dwelling unit and to fine-tune the current requirements based on the data that, again, is readily available from, I believe it's the International Traffic Institute. I always get their name wrong. Generated by different types of housing and the number of bedrooms. And take into account also the proximity to mass transit stations. It's called transit-oriented development. Housing built close within walking distance of transit stations generally generates fewer motor vehicles than those that are far away. So that's also something that should be taken into account. Now, I do want to make it clear, I agree with John that the zoning ordinance needs a massive overhaul, complete rewrite. But in the meantime, we need to deal with these sorts of issues in order to encourage development. The second issue I wanted to address was reduction in size of minimum square footage from 2,800 to 1,000. There is simply no justification for a 2,800 foot minimum lot area per dwelling unit. That is pure exclusionary zoning. In fact, that is one of the examples that was in the first Planning Advisory Service report I wrote for the American Society of Planning Officials 51 years ago. I was a very precocious six-year-old. And that's one of the examples I used in there for an example of what is pure exclusionary zoning. Now, in a town that has adopted an official policy encouraging diversity, equity, and inclusion, one that has put in its plan, it wants affordable housing. We certainly should be eliminating this 2,800 square foot requirement. These sorts of requirements are based on health and safety reasons, and there is simply no factual health or safety reason that would justify 2,800 feet. 1,000 feet might be able to justify it. I'm not sure, but it's much more reasonable and more likely to survive a court test. Studio and bedroom, one-bedroom apartments that people seem to be so concerned about, that's not going to cause any problems, quite honestly. If you're worried about tax money, they will be money makers for the school district and the village because they don't generate many students at all. You got to keep that in mind. The more bedrooms you have, the costlier it is to the school districts. And the houses that have 5-6 bedrooms, they're actually money losers for the school districts. That's a pretty universal fact. Finally, I'd like to address the question of the maximum heights. And I'm going to suggest something that has become a dirty word in this country, compromise. I fully recognize and understand the need to increase the maximum heights in our commercial districts. It's a basic need. The heights we have right now, frankly, are too low. But it can be done thoughtfully and with some innovation that could prevent the adverse impacts that people are so concerned about, and rightfully concerned about. I'd like to distribute this to the CBA. And I have a few copies I brought for people attending. I did not know there'd be so many people attending, so folks could share these. I'd appreciate it. There is a fair concern, I think it's a justifiable concern, of having a 4 or 5 or 6-story building adjacent to single-family housing. What I've distributed here is a piece from Golden, Colorado, about step-back zoning. I think I gave away my copy of it too. No, I got one. I got it. What this does in conventional use is put the tallest buildings, part of the building on the main street, and lower levels have the short. Well, what they're doing in Golden, having the shortest part of the building on the main street and then going higher as you go back. What I'm suggesting is that we be a little innovative and codify this, if for any of these multi-story buildings adjacent to a single-family neighborhood, the tallest part goes on the street and you have the height reduced, step backs, till you get to the area adjacent to the single family where it should be no more than two stories tall, which will make it fit in more with the neighborhood, won't interfere as much with light or air or shadows. The step backs should be applied at heights that tie in with the roof line of the smaller neighboring structures, reducing it so that when it's adjacent to the single family to be no more than two stories does that. It increases, it will increase solar pass-through. Bulk of your buildings do block light and air. And it will give developers the opportunity to build at the higher densities that they need to build. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit less density than if you could do a whole bulky building that's all six stories or five stories. But this gives us some compromise. It protects the neighborhoods from the concerns that they've brought up and enables the village to have higher density housing in the commercial districts. And you can even go higher along the street than 65 feet. Research has shown time and again that once you get above two or three stories, it doesn't make any difference how tall you go along the street. But the key is stepping it down, stepping it back. This is going to require some very careful research because a lot's going to matter with how deep the lots are and how you measure it. One way of doing it would be to say, depending if the lots are deep enough, within 75 or 800 feet of the single family district, it can't be more than two stories tall. That would require really deep lots. I don't think our lots are that deep, but you have to figure it out. And I would suggest that you have your consultant, if you pick me up on this idea, produce a number of models showing the different effect of different distances from the residential district where you have to be down to just two stories tall. So you get a realistic idea. I remember when I was at ZBA, John put together some models. I think when we were talking about setback, I don't remember exactly what it was, but they were extraordinarily helpful for us to determine what we would recommend to the village board. So I hope that this suggestion for compromise will be taken seriously. I think it would enable River Forest to show that you can have higher density. And this is not real high density. This is really moderate density, what's proposed. Commercial buildings with residential above the first floor that do not impinge on the surrounding single family homes and will preserve the single family character of those homes. I know by suggesting something sort of in the middle, people at each extreme are going to hate the idea. That's what America's become today, unfortunately. But as always, I think that the idea that's in the middle is probably the most effective and responsible route to go. Otherwise, I think that most of these suggestions that are proposed in this framework for a text amendment, because you do not have a text amendment in front of you at this stage, are pretty good ideas that should be pursued with these variations. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Mr. Lauber? Thank you, Dan. Trudy Ross.
Hi. I'm a fourth generation River Forest, dating back to 1905. Lived here all my life. And I don't think that back in 1981, when the Hoisington's motto of proud heritage, bright future was all of this. To me, there are so many empty buildings in the town. Why would a new developer want to come in? It looks as if our town is not prospering. It's not growing. I think that we need to focus more on filling these buildings, getting whether it's a rental. I understand on the Village website that they had six or seven properties that they had purchased that are they're trying to sell or lease. Along with that, there's a building at 424 Thatcher that's been vacant for years. The one that's that Strand building that was talked about last evening at our meeting, that's been vacant for 4 years on the same block, Mint Dental. And that's just in this area. I haven't even been up on North Avenue to look at that. The Village purchasing the property down on Madison, according to the website, says it was their goal of facilitating their repositioning, reuse, and or redevelopment. Having purchased that, they must have some kind of development in mind. And to me, commercial means it's going to produce revenue. It's not going to be a high-rise building that's giving taxes, yes, but we have to increase our schools, build more schools, more police, more fire. To me, commercial means producing revenue, businesses, other things that would pay our Village. I agree with everything that Debbie had said. I had other things prepared, but mainly it was repetition of what Debbie had said. But again, if I was a developer, I would look at all the empty spots. And last night, Mr. Graham mentioned that Lake Street was his number one priority. But then in the same breath, later on, he asked if there was not enough TIF money left, if the money to purchase additional property along Madison would come out of the Village. And the answer was yes. So that concerns me, too, that why they would be purchasing additional property.
Any questions? Thank you.
Luann Peterson.
Good evening. I just have a few comments based on some of the things that have been brought up tonight. I have lived most of my life in the Oak Park River Forest area, was born in Oak Park and lived there more than 35 years. I have now been a resident of River Forest this time around for 23 years. Most of us live here because we like the residential nature of this Village. If I wanted urban high rises, I probably would have gone downtown. This is why I chose to stay out here. I have a lot of concerns about proposed density that they talk about in some of these proposed zoning changes. Parking issues with the number of parking spaces proposed to be allotted per building. I think if any of you want to take a look at what a lack of parking can do, take a drive down Washington Boulevard through Oak Park at night or along Oak Park Avenue north of Lake Street. It might be an eye-opener for some of you before you consider making these changes. The height proposed changes. I live at the corner of Lathrop and Lake in the Centennial House condominium building. It's a six-story building, and since it was built 40-some years ago, I have to assume it meets that 50-foot height requirement. It's a tall building, so I'm not really certain if it's necessary to go to 65 feet in that area. We have very large units in that building and six floors. So I would ask the zoning board to really seriously consider, do we need to go to 65 feet, especially along the Lake Street corridor? If you want it as the entree to your Village, maybe you don't want it to look like a concrete canyon. The density proposals for buildings, I'm assuming they're looking at rental and I understand the tremendous need for affordable housing. I agree with something that was said earlier, that probably the best type of affordable housing is to be able to provide housing for middle income. That seems to be the biggest shortage in this area, as well as most of the other West Suburban communities that I'm familiar with. My personal feeling is that rental taxes most of your city resources, police, fire, schools, and doesn't contribute a whole lot. I look at Oak Park, our adjoining community here. In the last year or so, they've built four large story buildings, I would guess higher than what we're proposing. I certainly hope so. I believe of the four, three of them are rental, but I see the same number of empty storefronts on Lake Street when I walk there that have been there for years. So all this influx of new renters doesn't seem to have added too much to the commercial value of the village. These are just some thoughts I had, and I would hope that the board would consider some of these things before you make your decisions. I thank you very much for your time.
Heidi Yule.
Hello, thank you for the opportunity to address everybody. Thank you for the work that's been done thus far, and to Mr. Houseel for his work. I learned a lot, and it sounds like we definitely need to do some work to make our zoning simpler and more consistent. So appreciate the work and everybody's time on that. I am Heidi Yule. I'm a resident of 21 Franklin. From 1999 to 2020, I lived at 633 Ashland and raised my three children here. My husband and I purchased the two-flat property at 21 Franklin about 8 years ago. And in 2020, we sold our family home and moved to 21 Franklin with the idea that we would live here as we downsized. We have invested in the property significantly, and we now live on the second floor of the property and have a rental unit on the first floor. And so my comments are certainly mostly about River Forest in general and all the zoning that's been discussed, but also some of them relate to my experience on Madison Street and close to Madison Street. I do see the Forest Park building that was discussed that was built, the new building on the south side of Madison, out my kitchen window, and those lights I do see and shine into my back porch and my kitchen window. So that has been there since I've been living there full time. So my concern is really about what we are allowing in the proposal, including the height, the density, and the parking that people have talked about before. If I think about if we already give on the requirements, so we talked about how developers come and say, oh, can I do this more? Can I do this more? And anybody who's done renovation in their home, possibly you've been here saying, oh, could I make this a little higher or that a little bigger, et cetera. So I would expect if we already give on that, then a developer is going to come and say, well, it's already 65 feet. Can I have 70 feet? Much like right now, they say it's already whatever it is. Can I have more? So just something to think about. Have we done, I'm wondering some questions to think about also is, have we done any consideration of the downside of approving the specifics designed here? So lots of good thought about why we should do these things. Have we done any consideration of what are the downsides if we do it? Some people here have talked about some of the downsides. There are upsides. I'm a taxpayer too, so I know we're all concerned about addressing the tax situation here. But have we really been as thoughtful about the downsides of being here? So, for example, people smarter than me here would know, how would this impact the schools? Would it then create need for more funding for the schools? As somebody who has experience renting property, my own units before I lived there, I think almost everybody who lived there or came to us, or I'll say maybe at least 80%, 90%, had children that would be in the schools. And many of them wanted to have many children in a property with less bedrooms. So the comment about studios was very interesting, one bedrooms. My experience is people who are looking to live in the village for the reasons that we all like to live here are very willing to experience a high density and have a lot of people in a small unit. The parking, certainly that's very relevant to mine. Parking down there is very tight. I know it is in other parts of the village as well. The dentist on the corner of Ashland and Madison has tight parking. Her parking lot is full every day. I see many residents parking in the alley between Ashland and Franklin. Anybody go drive down there and you'll see 2, 3, 4, 5 cars parked in the alley, essentially double parked, not in the garages or in the spaces. So the residents that are there already are experiencing tight parking. So I would consider making sure that we think about that before we increase the density. And finally, if we pass something that residents are not in favor of, we talked about how developers want, you know, to have to go to places that people want them. If we pass something that the residents are not in favor of, does that not also impact the developer's interest in coming to River Forest versus going to some of the other towns like we're referenced, which are absolutely relevant? But when I think about it overall, in closing, I think about the reasons I chose to live in River Forest, because I looked at Forest Park and Oak Park, certainly when I came here in 1999, and certainly when my husband and I decided what we were going to do when we knew we were going to sell our big house. And I really wanted to live in River Forest for the reasons that many of us enjoy. That comes with some challenges as well as some really good things. But the bottom line, I think about it every day, is, and I appreciate that we got input from neighboring municipalities in this, but do we really want to be Elmwood Park or Oak Park or Forest Park here in River Forest? So I appreciate everybody's time, and I know this is a tough thing and a very emotional thing. So I thank you for allowing me time to speak.
Any questions for Mrs. Yule? Thank you.
Thanks.
Corey Gimble. Margie Seekander.
I'm Margie Seekander on the only block on River Oaks. I'm speaking tonight against the EDC's recommendations with qualifications of John Houseel's changes to the code for C1, C2, C3, and ORIC districts on building height, density, parking, and floor area ratio. Specifically, my concerns are raising building height in C2, C3, and ORIC districts, especially near single-family, townhouse, and condo residences like at Madison Street and Ashland at Hawthorne. 65-foot heights are unwarranted. Residents don't want canyons, nor do prospective buyers. Density reductions in C1 through C3 from 2,800 to 1,000 square feet per unit encourages development of apartment buildings rather than homeowner units. Reduction in parking from 2 to 2.5 spaces per unit down to 1.5 will lead to disastrous congestion in C2 as well as some other districts. The current Madison Street vacancies at the new River Forest townhomes and the new Forest Park businesses means there's an excess supply. As a village, much time, energy, and money was spent revising the comprehensive plan and the zoning code. Proposed changes should be more thoughtful, reviewed by residents, broadly communicated, and resident feedback elicited. I'm concerned about the current process and the lack of transparency. Mr. Houseel's proposals to extend C1 and C2 changes to C3 and ORIC districts were presented at the November 13th Village Board meeting less than 60 days ago. Three trustees questioned how the proposals would be communicated to residents. The village administrator suggested using the January 5 village newsletter. Nothing appeared, nor in other communications from the village to residents, except a required notice of tonight's public hearing, which appeared in the Wednesday Journal classified section 5 days before Christmas. While other taxing bodies published large block notices throughout December. At last night's special meeting of the EDC, at last night's special meeting, the EDC voted to recommend, with qualifications, John Housel's proposed zoning code changes. The EDC moved and voted on Matt Walsh's recommended wording. Audio of the meeting, unavailable earlier today, was now posted later this evening or this afternoon. I hope you had time to review it. Based on EDC comments last night, I couldn't help but wonder, is the outcome of this process predetermined? The village has a track record of bearing divisive issues in December, early January, and August. The EDC canceled 8 of its 12 meetings in 2023, one of which was rescheduled. December 6th was to have been a key meeting for comments on Mr. Housel's changes. When it seemed many residents might attend, the meeting was canceled, a conveniently obvious and typical village move. This is not engaging the community in good faith to work as partners, which is a stated village board goal. The village is in the development business with ownership of many lots, its role at Lake and Lathrop, and the EDC mentioning spending village general funds on the next purchase at Madison Street. I'm concerned about the lack of information on proposed changes. Where is the supporting evidence and data for raising heights, increasing density, reducing parking, and floor area ratio? Some of the developers included aren't developers that fit with our goals and objectives. Where are the interviewees' names, all the comments gathered, data on what was surveyed? Mr. Housel references other local community standards, but like others have stated, River Forest is not, nor does it want to be, like other local communities. Mr. Housel stated November 10th, the EDC suggested dwelling size be reduced from 1,800 square feet to 1,000 in the R4 district. And I quote, additional discussion is needed to determine whether the lowered standard should apply to residential development in C1, C2, C3, and ORIC. Did that discussion occur with adequate notice to residents? With 26 years of Housel and Levine being our village planner, his proposal to revise the whole comprehensive plan will generate a great deal more work for Mr. Housel. We thank Mr. Housel for his contribution. We need a plan that is inclusive of residents' values and perspectives. If any text, it's time to bring in fresh fresh viewpoint that is inclusive of those. If any text amendments are needed, the village staff should draft those. Where is the focus on benefit to residents and sensitivity to those impacted? All boards and commissions work for the residents. How many residents are looking at the agenda to know what is being proposed? If we have a rigorous DRB and ZBA review processes, and we divert village leadership from selecting and pushing through specific developers like the at Lake and Lathrop fiasco, we don't need broad zoning changes rammed through with little resident review and a predetermined outcome. I thank you for considering my points during your deliberations.
May I ask a question, Chairman Martin? Sure. Sorry to put you on a spot, Ms. Sikander, but
I'm sorry.
I didn't have time to listen to the EDC meeting last night. Why did they vote on this again last night? And do you recall what the vote is? Because I thought they put this to bed in May. So I'm surprised to hear that it was reconsidered.
It was voted on to extend to the C3 and ORIC districts. Is that correct, Mr. Walsh?
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is correct. We attempted to meet in November and December to discuss that very thing, but weren't able to meet until last night. And that's where the discussion came about some of the concerns from the EDC members to about that C3 and ORIC height being raised from 50 to 65 feet.
And was the vote 6-1 last night or 7-0 or what was it? Do you recall?
There were only 5 members present. They were all aligned with that. Yes.
Yes.
Kelly Epcala.
Epcarian.
Hi, I'm Kelly Epcarian. I live at 1226 William. And unlike maybe, I don't know where Mr. Housel lives, but I don't live next to these commercial sites, but I care about everyone in the community. That's why I moved here. I'm actually an original resident of Ohio. My husband grew up here. He's lived here since 1974. And his parents have occupied 1408 Lathrop. So we own two properties in this community. When we first moved out of college, and I like to pretend I'm not as old as I am, we lived in the city. And as part of living in the city, when we started having children, which we did live in a 1,000-square-foot unit, and I did shove multiple children in that unit. So unfortunately, I have to disagree with comments that people will not do what they got to do to get their kids the best education possible. They will put them in the smallest density possible to help their kids succeed in life. I know, because I'm a mother of two children, I would do anything to help my kids succeed. We moved from the city to Elmwood Park. Why did I move to the city to Elmwood Park? Because I wasn't at a place where I could afford River Forest. It was always my husband's dream to own property in River Forest. It's where he grew up. He also grew up next to the house that blew up that was also property owned by his father in the gas explosion in 1996. So I'm very passionate about any topic affecting this community, because if I wanted to continue to live at Elmwood Park, which, by the way, I lived buttressed up to the golf club. It was a beautiful property. I had no one to look at but the golf course behind me. And, you know, they called it Golf Course Row. And so I would have stayed there, right? But if I wanted to live in a density and neighboring cities that look like River Forest, I would have just stayed there where I paid a lot less property taxes. My kids could have went to a school system that was decent, but nowhere near the stature of what Oak Park River Forest High School, as well as the middle school and grade schools are here. What I will say, because I spend a lot of time in New York, an average studio size is 500 to 600 square feet. Bigger studios here in Chicago are 800 to 1,000 square feet. Those are considered nearly one-bedroom apartments. In New York, to give you a justification or some kind of proximity, New York-sized studios, because I almost moved there as a young college kid, is 200 to 400 square feet. And trust me, I was going to live with myself and another roommate in 200 to 400 square feet, because if you know the rental property values in New York, and as a young graduate, it's the only way you can afford to live and work there. So a larger one like 1,000 square feet being proposed will encourage, because construction costs are lowered when you don't have to accommodate so much parking, because you can make more money off the development of the four times the number of units you can put into that building. So to say it has zero impact on our schools is negligent. This needs to be studied. I do believe, and I grew up in Ohio where I lived in a village that went to a city. I remember celebrating when the village went from village to a city. And let me tell you about the problems that then manifested as that monumental day occurred in terms of infrastructure, in terms of police, in terms of overcrowding schools, in terms of special levies in which are special tax amendments in which to raise enough money to build more schools. All of this has to be studied and looked at before you just, quite honestly, irresponsibly, just propose a bunch of text amendments and say, oh, it's just a few changes in cleaning up the, you know, outdated textbook, which I don't disagree that I'm certain four chapters could be squeezed into one, but squeeze it into one with the same requirements that are laid out. There's no need to sit there and change all of this without proper data. I work in data. That's what I do for a living. I've done it for 25 years. Matt Walsh is very familiar with me and my data. You can look at the meeting minutes from the traffic board study. I believe that you cannot make decisions in today's world without doing legitimate studies with experts. And you got to let the data do the talking to let you as a village make the right decisions, not just for today or tomorrow, but for 5 years out, 10 years out. And you really have to understand when a village grows beyond its means and becomes a city due to population density of residents, there is a lot of challenges that come along. My town, Pickerington, Ohio, is now considered one of the meth capitals in Ohio. It did not bring commercial development like they expected. It did not achieve a lot of the objectives that they hoped for. And trust me, growing up, I had cows in my backyard. I did not have high-rise dwellings, et cetera. So I just would encourage you guys to honestly make sure that you really understand the societal impacts on schools, on police, on infrastructure, on roads. And as Matt knows well, if the traffic committee is any real example of not making great decisions and listening to the data, and then finally listening to the data and taking down blockades and everything else, it's so critical that you spend the time before you just make adjustments to all of these parameters. And if we're making exceptions and we're approving every developer that comes in, that's not discouraging anyone. They probably know, hey, all you got to do is like fill out the paperwork, show up, and it gets stamped in this community. Because he said there's only been one exception in his 25 years. So please don't say that that's discouraging people from coming, because no one's been turned away except one in the 25 years. So what I would say is that also affordable housing is more than just creating high rises and buildings. The problem is beyond the control of all of us in this room. Interest rates have not come down. So more people are renting than buying. Why? Because they can't afford mortgages. I don't care what the size of the mortgage is. The interest alone today will crush a normal middle-income family. So what do? They rent. How does that rent help our community? I don't really know, because I think we're paying for those kids to go to our great schools and they're not contributing to the tax system that's affording them that opportunity. And so at the end of the day, you know, I think this traffic thing is real. According to lots of studies that are going to be reviewed, I think next Wednesday, so I'd encourage all of you guys to attend that, is that, you know, we already have some level of traffic and safety concerns for the well-being of our members of this community in terms of speeding, in terms of accidents, in terms of just too much traffic coming off of North Avenue, coming off of Harlem. And for those of you who have not participated in the fun, you know, the reality is that this, I guarantee you, I don't have a fact, I don't want to be held negligent, but what I do know is that if we're putting more people and we're reducing the number of parking spots that are required, the cars have to go somewhere, the traffic has to go somewhere. I don't understand, when we already are saying against the current kind of density requirements today, we're already busting at the seams in traffic and safety, right? And so I would ask that whatever decisions you guys make, this has to be correlated with the traffic study and commission, and to literally simulate what would be the impact of these types of changes in the number of buildings and the number of people and the number of cars and the number of people who have to get access to their buildings in which to live and work. I would also just echo some of my neighbors who did an eloquent job tonight. So as much as I'd love to just reread their speech to just make a real strong point, I won't make you sit through their speech again. But if I could literally reread it, I would, because they were point on so many aspects of being very thoughtful. I think one of the key things is social media is rampant today. Classified ads, people, 5 days before Christmas. I only found out because one of my wonderful neighbors sent me the classified ad over email, a picture of it. I would have never known. And I have attended every meeting I can possibly find out about. But I do have the Wednesday Journal. It comes to my house, but I'm not looking in the classified section. So proper notification is critical, because what else are you trying to hide from if you don't want to make sure you understand the voice of the residents, which you guys are all residents. It should matter that every voice is heard, because that's true democracy. And so what I would just say is that, in summary, you guys have to take a step back. And I'm against all the changes because I don't see any data. I don't see any data other than the adjacent neighborhood I left. So maybe I should go back and try to get my friend to let me rebuy my house back, since the density is going to be the same, or actually even worse than Elmwood Park, which is where I came from 2 years ago when I bought 1226 William Street. So I would just ask that you guys If I wanted to live in Elmwood Park, I would have stayed there. If I wanted to live in Oak Park, I would have moved there. I chose River Forest for so many reasons. And so what I would ask that you guys do is that you've got to look not just at today, but 3 years out, 5 years out, 10 years out, and truly understand when this village one day becomes a city, what does that mean to infrastructure, to police, to safety, to traffic, to the community? What does that mean to the taxes, property taxes of all these wonderful residents in the community who already feel overtaxed today? I'm telling you, I watched school levy after school levy after school levy, and it drowned the community in Pickerington, Ohio. So I just urge you, it's not as simple as just changing some numbers in a grid. You have to have data behind how did you get to those numbers to begin with. And I respect his expertise. I'm not a zoning expert, but I am a data expert that says, give me the facts so that I can get educated, so then I can make my opinionated based on real data. And I haven't seen any data presented. He did a great job, but oh my God, I'm exhausted by that presentation because I didn't really learn anything other than here's all the changes, but I don't know shadow. I don't know how it's going to affect my streets. I don't know how it's going to affect my schools. I don't know how it's going to affect my property taxes. So to just change numbers willy-nilly without actual data is truly reckless, not only of everyone in this community, but definitely of the zoning committee who has a responsibility to the residents to ensure that you guys yourselves are looking at data to make better informed decisions. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Is that everybody on the list?
That's it.
All right. That's everybody who signed up to speak to us tonight. Is there anybody else in the audience who wants to address us? All right. Mr. Houseel or Mr. Welsh, do you want to?
Yeah, I can respond to some of that. I just want a lot of the good points are made, some of the correct things were stated. So I'm trying to get things on the record.
First, I appreciate everybody coming out. Again, 25-year-plus resident. I love this community as well. Raised 3 kids here. Wife and I still live here, empty nesters, unfortunately. So, again, I love this village as well. So I understand people have different opinions. I like when things don't get accusatory or personal because we're just trying to do what's best for this community, even though everybody has difference of opinion. So I just want to go through a couple of different things that were stated that I thought were some good points and some things I think, again, that were sort of statements that were made that were not technically correct because of some terminology that was used. One resident had stated this was akin to spot zoning. Spot zoning is a thing that is problematic and is the basis for a lot of lawsuits. I've been expert testimony on a lot of them. Spot zoning is when you look at a specific property and rezone it out of context of everything else that's similarly zoned in that district. Text amendments affect every property in that zoning district community-wide. By definition, it is not spot zoning, not even close. So that's not true. The notion that this was done as sort of an end around for affordable housing, I can say adamantly that's not true. This community has debated affordable housing at length in years past, probably will again going forward as needs and things change to recalibrate and fine-tune those efforts. The EDC did not discuss this as an aspect or an end around to try to get affordable housing. The financing for affordable housing, the densities, the size units, the mechanisms for it are complex and not easy to do in any market, let alone River Forest prices. This is not an end around for affordable housing. It was never discussed at the EDC as a means to get at affordable housing. So that's just a little bit of a boogeyman that didn't exist in the process. And I can, and again, I'm sworn to telling the truth on all of this. So it's just not the case. It was stated that the ZBA is being asked to must pass this, quote unquote, just because you must pass it without any reasoned explanation. The first 10 minutes was laying out the rationale and the explanation as to why the Zip Village went down this road to explore this to begin with. So it didn't come out of the blue. You don't have to do anything. That was my opening statement. You could take it, leave it, change it, whatever you want. It's at your call. So you don't have to do anything just because. And there's a history rationale as to why the village got to this point and asked the EDC to look at it. So agree with the rationale or not, there's a rationale there that's been building for decades as a reason to need to examine this, even if you don't like the EDC's recommendations. There's a lot of that stuff. Again, passions run high, and I get that. These are people's homes. I lived on Vine Street next door to Hazel Snover, 7616 Vine Street for the first 5 or 6 years I lived in River Forest. I know that neighborhood extremely well, but with 2 dogs, 3 kids, and more on the way, we needed a slightly bigger backyard. So I know the neighborhood real well. Dan Lauber made a few different good points. Parking, I'm still, I think the 1.5 works well. What 1.5 does is some units may need 2, some units may need 1, but the aggregate of 1.5 over a 1-unit or 2-bedroom mixed complex, the owner can then assign whether they get 1 or 2 or some for guest parking. So, but looking at a more nuanced parking ratio per unit size, that's an easy thing to do. Those tables exist for the national engineering standards. Those exist. We can get those easily. Density, I agree with Dan. The number one response we got, and I've thought this for years, the 2,800 square foot lot area per unit requirement is the one thing everybody we spoke with said was just way off the norm of rational market expectations is that number. And what the number has to be or should be going forward, it's up to the village, whether it's 1,000 or something else. But the 2,800 is it's the biggest site development allowance that gets granted when multifamily gets things. And it wasn't that one development in the last 25 years was granted without exception. It's the ones including multifamily development. There were a lot that were done without height or density or whatever, but the ones asking for multifamily are the ones where the exceptions were given. And I agree with Dan on some of the height stuff. Back under previous administration here, when I think when they were even contemplating purchase of the Lutheran Family Services, but before they did, we did some 3D analysis of what that site could look like under different development scenarios that showed step back, 5-story, 2-story, 3-story, varying step backs off of the alley to the north, all that stuff. So, and again, that was probably 4 or 5 years ago. If we need to revisit that, we certainly can. And if we need, if the village directs us to do a shadow study, we can do that, I think, at any hour, any day of the year from any angle. So that's easy to do if we want to do that. And we've done a lot of zoning ordinances across the country that have a stepped back thing. I've not seen them that go to 2 stories, but 3-story for adjacent residential. But I agree with Dan on a lot of those points. The 5 to 6 story, the one person, I think your name was Luann, is that right? Luann lives in a, yeah, lives in an existing building, you said, is it 6 stories? Yeah, I think what a lot of people forget is in that Village Center area, there's a lot of some of the older multifamily in town, and it's 5, 6 stories. There's a decent amount of that. The big difference, I think, between residential now and residential in years past is the floor to ceiling height in contemporary residential is a higher ceiling height, and in older buildings, it's a little bit smaller or lower. So that accounts for, you know, over the course of a 4, 5, or 6 story building, several different feet. For a reminder, even though the limit is 50 feet, Lake and Lathrop was approved at, I think, 84 feet. 5 stories. It was only 5 stories, but I think it was 84 feet. Okay. So to give you an example of, right, you know, right. Well, yeah, no, exactly right. And the units there, but the units there, I think, were what, 2,800 square feet or more in size. They were monster units. So the price tags were very, very, very high. I think that the Clinton and Lake Street, the one that was rebuilt to move and accommodate River Forest Town Center Phase 2, I think that's 74 feet. The one next near the post office, just right. So, but there are several in the Village Center area that are 5, 6 stories around at 55 to 62 feet in height. So a lot of the oldest multifamily we have here is more than 50 feet and more than
2 stories. John, do any of those buildings you're talking about abut single family homes?
There's a few single family homes mixed in there, not many. I think a good example of the step back thing, and I think people forget this, is at people talk about there's nothing of this height, 50 feet in height on Madison Street. Gale Avenue and Madison Street has a 4 or 5 story condominium building that is well in excess of 50 feet on Madison Street. It is. It's, I think it's 4 or 5 stories. It's in excess of 50 feet.
But isn't it adjacent to townhouses that were part of the
part, yeah,
yeah, there's a courtyard there.
They're part of the same development.
Right. This goes back to sort of Dan's notion of the bigger building is on the street, and then they have a lower product or portion of that development adjacent to the single family. There's townhomes to the north end of that development that provide like a three-story transition to the single family. So it gets to sort of Dan's.
But it was one development.
It was one development, correct. And it had a couple of different bearing height products in that one thing. But what is on Madison Street is, I think, a four- or five-story product. I don't know which it is. I have to double check. I've driven by it a million times. Yeah, so it's a four-level, it's a four-story building, right. So, and that's what we're talking about. That was the changes the EDC said was ground floor parking and commercial with three floors of residential above. So I think the EDC also sort of looked at that as that could be replicated elsewhere if the separation and stuff could be handled well, because that exists now on Madison Street. So I think those are all pretty good points. The one thing about school impact, and this I think deserves to be said more than anything, our firm is driving in the planning profession data-driven decision-making. It drives almost everything we do as a firm. We do more geoanalytics than any other firm almost in the United States, and Dan can attest to this. What zoning does not do, zoning can't look at the detailed data impacts of every development scenario because they're infinite. It could have been a series of multifamily buildings on Heinz Lumper. It turned out to be townhomes. You could have had multifamily over here where that medical office building is on Thatcher. It turned out to be a medical office building. So what you do, and Chairman Martin and any member of the plan development can say that, approval here is not a rubber stamp. Developers don't come here thinking like, I'll just apply and you'll get it. More development gets turned away and never sees the application process because they just can't meet our standards. That happens time and time and time and time and time again. It never gets to the application process. Hold on, because it can't meet the standards. But when an application comes forward, they have to do a detailed traffic analysis. They have to do a financial analysis. They have to demonstrate that parking works. They have to do things like shadow studies and line of sights. They have to do light photometric plans. They have to do all of that to even be to apply to the village. And it's a very rigorous thing. And so when something applies for an application or for approval, that's when all that extensive data has to come out. All the zoning amendment does, it changes the zoning regulations on the ground. We're talking about going, the EDC wanted to go from three stories to four stories, for instance. We're going a floor up. Uses are the same. Setbacks are the same. They want to increase density and reduce parking. But you could get someone to come in and do a series of two-unit owner-occupied condominiums, or someone could come in and do a bunch of one-bedroom apartment buildings. Zoning can't differentiate between ownership structure. Zoning cannot say owner occupied, and the zoning ordinance cannot say rental. It cannot differentiate. So you can't run those numbers till an application is put forward. So what we're trying to do is set the table to try to get better applicants to come forward with better market responsive proposals. At the time a proposal comes forward, the specificity and the detail has to be provided. You can't run exhaustive analysis on an infinite number of no ordinance anywhere does this, and we do this all over the United States. Well, I'm just talking about data. You can't run a scenario on every single one. So hold on. Let me just go finish going through all my comments on this. School impact is a very good, important one. Its school impact is based on unit size and type of product. The school district uses national standards and regional standards. The school determines what the impact is, not the village, not the developer. The school, when an application comes forward, the school says, we determine, Mr. Developer, this is your impact. Write us a check for this. The school district determines that. The village doesn't, and the applicant doesn't.
But you're talking about two different things.
What do you mean?
You're talking, the village code has a formula in there.
Correct.
For how much a developer has to pay to a school district. But I think what the concern is, you know, forget the money. You know, what if we get 30 more units in the, you know, how many kids is that going to generate? What's that going to do to the school? You know, remember 25, 30 years ago, we tore down a school here.
Right, because, in Washington, yeah.
Because the projection was we weren't, the school population was going to decrease.
Right.
So, you know, I think in retrospect that was not a great decision, but it's too late to do anything about it except to, you know, has there been any discussion with the school district about, you know, can they take 20 more kids in there or not?
Right. And so those impacts get discussed, and we usually get letters, or we'll seek letters or input from the school district when a development comes forward. But what I'm saying is, I'm a firm believer in data. If there are specific metrics or analysis the village would like us to run, we can run them. The challenge is what range of analyses you want us to run. We can do them. We do them for developments all the time, but it's more challenging to do for underlying zoning because you get you could get an infinite number of variable. You know, in commercial, you could get a restaurant, or you could get a doctor's office, or you could get a chocolate shop, and all those, but all those have different impacts, right? So we can do those analyses, but we need guidelines or what you would like us to do the analysis on. So I think it's important, the EDC and what made it forward in this amendment, there is no provision in here to allow for studios. That provision for a minimum of one bedroom didn't get removed. So that's still in here. And the analysis we ran, and again, it wasn't a proposed development, it was just for volumetrics. We didn't do anything that would have to be 50 plus only studio apartments. We didn't do that. And the volumes that we show for volumetric purposes didn't have, you wouldn't be able to park that. So we didn't do anything that showed 50 plus affordable housing studio apartments. So again, somebody might think that's what they thought would come out of that development, but we didn't run any of those numbers. And didn't propose anything like that. So
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So if we're just strictly talking about residential, let's say, don't they have some more common scenarios? I mean, I don't want to hear unlimited scenarios.
Yeah. Wait, did you say more what?
Unlimited scenarios. Oh, I want to know.
The first part, I didn't hear you said.
Residential, just residential.
Right.
Okay. So let's say 10 studios, 10 one bedrooms, 10 two bedrooms. They can't give us some common scenarios, like maybe one or two scenarios, or a limit of how many children would be added to the school district?
Absolutely. So as an example, with the previous two administrators ago, before I think Lutheran Family Services was acquired, we did some 3D analysis work on that site where we showed like elevator bays, hallways, and ranging from one to two bedroom units. Just a sort of a mix. Again, we don't know what it's exactly going to be, but to show how many units would be, how many parking would be off the alley, the whole thing, and massing with a two-story up, step back, then another two stories. We've got those. They're like 4+ years old. And I don't know that when we generated those for the village, they ever used them. We were requested to do them, so we did them. We turned them over. I'm not sure who looked at them or what they did with them, but I don't think they ever made anything. They never went anywhere. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, if the village is asking us to make decisions on this, I'd like to have as much data as possible. And I want to go through each one of these one by one, each zoning district.
Absolutely. So we can do what was suggested. We can do shadow studies. We can do the 3D analysis. That's not hard to do. You can do detailed, you know, high fidelity, or you can do volumetric. Volumetric works better for zoning. We can color code it by floor, by use. We can put in there what would be generally standard or acceptable sort of like configurations. Again, it could be anything, but we could show you some general configurations. That's easy to do.
And I'd also like to see what the infrastructure looks like on North Avenue from the village standpoint and Madison Street, size of water mains, electrical, so on and so forth, sewers. What's the village on the hook for then?
Yeah, we can do that. I think there was some discussion at the EDC, and I think the feedback was that going an additional floor in these districts, or having twice as many units in a building than we permanently do now, wouldn't necessarily increase like a storm sewer size or a water main size as a result of a handful of those developments in key locations. But we could certainly ask Public Works to look at that based off of scenarios.
I mean, the reason I'm asking all this is because this is going to be set in stone for years to come, and this is going to determine what the community becomes in the next 50 or 100 years. And I'd like to have this town stay pretty much the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
My opinion.
Yeah. And the care, and again, there, you know, I did the comprehensive plan, and I know that the defining character of the neighborhoods is the core DNA of the village. It just is. We have limited commercial opportunity. Most of it is on the fringe, not all of it. Some of it's on Lake Street. And that's why, like I said, when it became a recommendation by the village board, that we examine these to increase the height to accommodate more residential as part of mixed use. It was not a decision I think the board took lightly. And I think they're trying to do, and maybe people disagree with how the board has approached it, but they sincerely are looking to balance. I think.
We've seen how the board approached it on Lake Street.
But I you know, the intent is to try to balance economic development necessity with the character of the village. And again, there's going to be a lot of opinions as to all the EDC members that supported this or gave us the direction to do this. They're all River Forest residents as well. So
do they have any of these studies? Did they go over any data, anything whatsoever before they just
most all of voted the on it? On the EDC are involved in the development. I don't know the resumes of all, but most of them are involved in development, finance, retail, commercial market. So this is their bread and butter for most of them. So they know this inside and out. And when we look at neighboring communities, we don't look at neighboring communities to say we need to do what they're doing. But in the past, when the ZBA has looked at, say, residential FAR or residential setbacks, the first thing we are always directed to do is what are some of the other communities doing? And they never defer to that as then we should, but they just like to know. So we can say we've looked at them. So because here we're talking specifically about certain corridors and we're neighboring often with the other side of the corridor, the question was, well, what are the neighboring communities doing? So they didn't use that and say, because Elmbrook Park is doing this, we have to. But the natural question is, what are others doing with regard to this?
Well, I'm not saying there's not going to be changes. There's going to be changes made. But let's be thoughtful about it. 100%. Let's get all the data. Let's not rush into this.
No, and I agree. And I agree. It shouldn't be rushed. And I don't think the village is. And I sort of take exception to the notion that there's a lack of transparency or trying to sneak anything by. Most communities would go straight to the ZBA with a public hearing, which is what we're doing now. But before we'd even got to this public process, the village said, let's have the EDC take a look at it before we even consider it for an amendment. So most communities that would go to a public hearing process, then you could do all sorts of outreach and, you know, get input. But it sort of starts with that public hearing. Here, in addition to that, starting just this evening, the village did a whole nother round with another group before they even said, let's consider it. So it's not that I think they're circumventing, rushing, or trying to subvert a public process or a dialogue. They did more than most communities do to even get it to the starting point. And now we're starting it. So the more input, the better. The more resident involvement, the better. The more analysis we can do, the better. As a consultant, we don't have, Dan can speak to this, we don't have the liberty to do whatever we want. We do what we've been asked to do and are directed to do. So we do the very best we can within that parameters. But we can't just say, oh, you didn't ask us to do 3D analysis, but we did a ton of it. Here's an invoice. Can't do that. So if we're directed to do that, we can do it very easily. Up to this point, we have not been asked. So
I would just recommend that you let the public know more simply because they might have input we don't even think about.
Yeah, I agree. And I have nothing to do with legal notice. So I'm just saying that's the village. But I agree 100%. I just assume 200 people show up to a room as opposed to 20.
I think it would be very helpful if you would perform a shadow study.
Easy.
Because I think that there's a big difference along Madison Street in particular, having the ability, I don't remember the numbers, but between 50 and 60 feet or between 45 and 60 feet is a matter of right.
Yep.
And I think that you're not really characterizing what happens before the Development Review Board fairly, that oftentimes the developer will come in and will ask for a site allowance from the current standards. But if the current height limit is 45 feet, say, and they want to go 50 feet or they want to go 60 feet, so the DRB considers that and determines whether or not the application meets the standards that the village tells us to consider. You know, if we start from 60 feet, what's going to happen, in my opinion, is that we're going to have people coming in asking for 70 and 80 feet, which is well beyond what the apparently what the EDC thinks is proper. And so I don't think it's accurate to say it's not going to affect the zoning board or the Development Review Board. It may not affect the process.
That's what I was stating. We weren't allowed to change the process.
It's going to severely impact what those boards are being requested to consider.
Right. And you know, right. And so when I said we couldn't We were almost even directed to not amend the PUD. I'm talking about the process, the PUD approval entitlement process, not the consideration. But
I think all these changes, if they're implemented, you know, they're going to leave the process the same, but they're going to have a great impact on what the applicants are requesting.
Right. And I think, and this is my intent as to why the village is doing this, and if the board says otherwise or if Matt thinks otherwise, the point that my understanding is why the village decided to go down this road and why it emerged in the comprehensive plan as a resident-driven process and a village board-driven thing is the frustration of residents that developments were being approved that didn't follow code, right? And so what a lot of residents have been saying over the years is then let either hold developers to the code or change the code so we know what to hold developers to. And so if the village goes down the road of amending this with new standards, I would think it would be the rarity that a developer would get an exception, not the norm. Because right now I think the standards are below market. So every developer comes in, asks for more. We know they're not maybe calibrated to what they should be. So we tend to grant more. But if we said we've gone through this, we've thought about it, we've reset the standard, quit asking for more. But then residents know what the expectation is. They can ask for more, but the village doesn't have to approve. No, they can ask for more. Hold on. But the village doesn't have to approve more. But that frustration was the impetus for why the village did this, was we didn't adhere to the height bulk standards because we found that they weren't appropriate. So the consensus was try to establish appropriate standards.
It's because in each instance, we found that the application met all the standards that the village told us to consider.
Right. Exactly right. So my interpretation is the village wants to do this to set a standard of bulk standard, development standard, that residents can point to and say, this is our standard. We've revisited these. Let's quit going above it all the time. That's why, as opposed to having standards that every developer gets a little more than. So I believe that's what the village is trying to do. So
I've got another couple questions.
It's easier for the DRB?
I think they're trying to make it easier for the DRB. Exactly right. Yeah.
We haven't met in a year.
Yeah, good.
So again, these are EDCs and villages was the application. This isn't a quote unquote house seal recommendation and what I would do if it was up to me. My charge is to do what I'm asked to do. I think a lot of the recommendations the EDC said are sound and best practice. We now have to right size them for River Forest. Any level of analysis we can do and do quickly. And I think the more we can do, the better at your direction. Shadow studies, absolutely. Step back analysis, absolutely. To do some development scenarios with a typical or fairly standard unit count, 1-2 bedroom mix, whatever with parking, we can certainly show what that looks like. Absolutely. Yeah, that's not difficult to do.
All right, so let's pause for a minute and see what's the feeling of the board. Are you want to continue with this discussion this evening? You want to ask for additional information so that we can then continue this discussion at a later time? What's your thoughts?
I'd like to continue this evening, but I'm sensitive to the fact that we're getting near 10 and, you know, people may want to go home. I read through all these resident concerns and just have a list here that I think we need to kick through, which may take an hour. But all the concerns in the letters, I have additional questions. You know, I think there's more to cover.
Okay.
I think we should have a shadow study at the very least, just to understand. I mean, I would even like to see something that shows a building on that. Several different buildings on that piece of dirt and what it looks like, and just look at a block, you know, up there doesn't really tell me what's going to be built there, you know, what would be built there. So I have concerns about that.
Right. And if we see a shadow study, I'd like to see it with Dan's proposal of having a step back,
right,
and how that would look too.
Yeah, we can do that.
One question I had, and again, I'm sensitive to time, is as I read through these letters and as I heard the comments at the EDC, I feel like the Southside residents, and I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but I feel like they are bearing the burden of kind of affordable housing and dense units and all of that. Why is that? Why are these type of developments kind of confined to the North and South corridors? There's an empty lot across from me at 936 Franklin for years.
At what point?
It's R4. I'm in R4, so in kind of the estate district. Why are there no proposals to amend zoning in my district? And I know the answer because all my neighbors would flip out and we'd have this outcry. But I just don't understand why these neighbors having an outcry is somehow different than Central River Forest neighbors having an outcry.
No, and so a couple of things. The densities we're proposing in the commercial districts are not higher in Madison than they are in the other districts. So it's the same density we're proposing for all of them. The height across
in the commercial district.
Yeah, I'm saying R4, and I'm not suggesting this. Yeah. Just like I said,
sure,
people would freak out. Yeah. But is it historical? Because when I drive through Oak Park, I see dense apartments beside homes. It's more right. mixed. And one of the letters uses the word integration, and I agree with that. If we're going to have affordable, it should be integrated throughout the village.
So here's my answer to that. So it's not that the more dense stuff is handling it and being assigned to the commercial in Madison Street. It's why the village, I think, expanded to all commercial districts. So the same treatment is being everywhere. In fact, in terms of height, the Madison Street is the lowest. Now, the R4, we were not asked to look at the R4. We sort of proactively tried to get some multifamily standards into the commercial because the EDC talked about the need to do that. It goes back to the statement, I think there should be a comprehensive overhaul of the entire zoning ordinance. So you can say, here's our approach to multifamily. Here's what it ought to be in the R4. Here's what it ought to be in the commercial districts. Let's take a hard look at the institutional districts. Let's take a look at these things. But our charge was first to look at C1, C2. And then I think when the village sort of realized you couldn't just look at two districts and two locations, you got to look at the commercial districts. So they expanded it to the commercial districts. We were not charged to look at R4, but we looked at multifamily in the commercial, pulling in from R4 because the EDC said we've got to include residential in the commercial. I think we should be looking at R4. I think we should be looking at R3. I think we should be looking at all the districts in the whole ordinance at some point to make sure the ordinance is an implementation tool to realize the vision for the community. And it's hard to do when you're only looking at a couple of districts. You have to look at in totality all the districts and how they work together. I can't look at the R4. I wasn't asked to look at the R4. You'd have to look at the 2019 comprehensive plan. It's all, I mean, I could recite it to you, but it's a big document that was a year and a half.
Work over. Just so you know, yeah. Life has changed.
It has.
Everything's changed. And in a world
of social
media and fast-paced, what I do for a living is IT, everything's changed. So if you're basing something on 2019, and everybody's life in here has changed since 2019 drastically, okay, not just a little bit, then maybe that plan is a little outdated.
Just real quick, comprehensive plans are enabled municipalities and counties by state enabling legislature.
I get it. I do disaster recovery for a living.
Comprehensive plans are written on a 10 to 20 year horizon.
I get it, but they didn't understand COVID was hitting.
Well, I understand. If the village wanted to do another comprehensive plan, we could do it. It's a long process.
Mr. Walsh, what do you got for us?
I just wanted to add on a little bit to what John was saying, that there were discussions about expanding a look at the zoning code from top to bottom. The priority was to address the commercial districts, which was spurred because of the TIF districts in place on North Avenue and Madison Street. That was expanded to the other commercial districts because that aligns with one of the prescriptions from the comprehensive plan, which I know there have been comments that it's outdated, but there were still prescription about examining those districts, the C1, C2, C3, and ORIC districts. And that's where we wanted to, we know how lengthy of a process this is, how much of a change it is, and taking all of it on at once, but like too big of an ask at the time.
Okay, so should we want to continue this? So I meant it. All right, so I think the feeling of the zoning board is that we should continue this hearing
and leave the public portion of the hearing open so that at when we meet again, if there are additional comments from the residents, we can accept them. So does somebody want to make a motion to continue the discussion of these proposals to the next scheduled meeting, which is February 8th?
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
Ms. Price.
Yes.
Mr. Blavatsch.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
I could keep going, but I'll vote yes.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
I could keep going.
All right, so the last, we will continue the hearing until February 8th. The last thing on our agenda is public comment, which is to not related to these matters, but to anything else that people want to address the board on. Hearing no request for comment, I'll have a motion to adjourn.
I'll motion to adjourn.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
And I mean, the village is going to say they're not developing, or tourists are restricted. I don't know. I just don't want to just work out for it. Yeah. And there's city right now. And there's a new development, or not new, but there's a development right across from the open hand services. It's happening. Thank you.
Thank you for showing
up. So I just know there's a massive town project happening.
Most of the days, that's the thing that John sets out for new ideas.
But he has them in like going out there. It's hard to tell. Is it just? No, he's not. I agree with one of those. So there's a real.